Shahrazad paused. As she leaned forward to select a grape, she shot a furtive glance over the caliph's shoulder to the decorative screens leading to the terrace. They were still shaded in the cloak of night. The crew began to panic. They were stranded in the middle of the sea and had no way of guiding the ship back on course. Arguments arose as to which sailor would assume the role of captain. Consumed in this struggle over power, the crew failed to realize a speck of land had appeared on the horizon. Ajib was the first to point it out. It looked like a tiny island with a mountain at its center. At first, the crew rejoiced at the sight. But then, an older sailor muttered something that ignited the panic anew. The caliph listened, his amber eyes focused squarely on Shahrazad. He said, "God be with us. It is the mountain of adamant." When a general outcry ran through the others at the truth behind these words, Ajib asked what made this mountain so terrifying that grown men quailed at its sight. The old sailor explained that the mountain of adamant possessed a dark magic that pulled ships toward it by virtue of the iron in their hulls, and once a ship was fully within its grasp, the adamant had such power that all the nails would be drawn out of the vessel, thereby sinking it to the bottom of the sea and sentencing all its occupants to a watery grave. Instead of wasting time lamenting their predicament, perhaps they should try to sail in the opposite direction, the caliph suggested dryly. And this is exactly what Ajib advised. Every oar was manned, and immediate action was taken to foil the mountain's nefarious plot. But it was too late. For once the great blackness looms in the distance, there is little that can be done. By then, the mountain already has you in its grip. Sure enough, in spite of all their efforts, the ship drifted closer and closer, faster and faster, into the shadow of adamant. Soon, a terrible groaning could be heard from the depths of the ship's hull. It began to shudder and shake as though the weight of the world were perched on its bow. In horror, the crew watched as nails ripped and spun from the wood around them. The ship started to break apart and collapse in on itself like a child's plaything underfoot. Ajib joined in the shrieking and the sorrowful wails of his fellow crewmen as they were thrown into the sea and left to fend for themselves. Shahrazad lifted her glass and reached for the wine. She hid her surprise when the caliph filled her cup without a word. The very edge of the screen behind him was beginning to lighten. Ajib scrambled onto the stern of the ship, the last part of the boat still intact. In the melee, he noticed a heavy iron pot sliding past him in the direction of the mountain. Using the deft hands of a master thief, Ajib snatched the pot and clung to it for dear life as he was pitched over the side and into the vast waters of the sea. The pot weighed him down terribly, and he fought to stay afloat, searching for something to cling to. The sound of his fellow sailors drowning around him only made his search all the more desperate. When he found a broken piece of the main mast, he flung his free arm around it, still clutching the pot with a frantic kind of fierceness. The caliph's sharp features softened in understanding. It's quick thinking on Ajib's part. He is hoping the pot will direct him to the island. Shahrazad smiled. Precisely. After many hours, Ajib's instincts led him to land. He stumbled onto the shining black coastline of adamant, exhausted and trembling with fear. He passed out in the shadow of the mountain and did not awaken for many hours. When dawn broke, he stirred and began the search for food and water, before realizing this was truly a place of death and destruction. No life stirred anywhere around him, and water was as scarce as hope on this desolate wasteland. He collapsed against a pile of rocks in despair, realizing his demise was once again upon him. As the rocks behind him shifted, a small metal chalice slid out from between the cracks. It was old and worn, beaten around the edges. A faint blue light crept higher up the screen, sliding between its beautifully carved slats, bringing the designs from haunting silhouette to life. Ajib studied the chalice. It was caked with sand and mud. He staggered to the water's edge to clean it. When the dirt floated away beneath the surf, he realized the cup was covered in markings, the like of which he had never seen. He raised it into the sunrise, but drops of water still marred the surface, so he swiped his sleeve across the cup to dry it. Now the very edges of the screen were tinged in the glowing white of dawn. The rays of light streamed through the slats onto the marble floor like veins of raw gold, stretched thin in the heat of the early morning sun. Sherazade's heart threatened to burst from her throat. And the chalice started to tremble. From its hollow depths, a smoke, the color of a clear midday sky, began to swirl and grow until it became a flameless plume. In terror, Ajib dropped the chalice and fell backward against the hard black pebbles of Adamant's shore. The smoke grew in size and density until a shadow formed in its center. The caliph bent forward. The shadow solidified and began to laugh. Sherazade stopped. Dawn had arrived behind the caliph in all its horrifying glory. "Why did you stop?" he asked. She twisted her eyes in the direction of the terrace. The caliph followed her gaze. "You may finish the story," he stated. Sherazade inhaled with care. "I'm afraid that's not possible, Saidi." "Excuse me?" "I have only just begun the tale." His eyes narrowed to ochre slits. "Finish the story, Sherazade." "No." He unfolded to his feet in a ripple of grace. "So was this your plan all along?" "What plan would that be, Saidi?"
"A trick? A tactic? To stay your execution? To begin a tale you had no intention of finishing?"
His voice was deathly low.
"I have every intention of finishing it. Tomorrow night. Whether or not that happens is entirely up to you."
She stared up at him, clenching her fists within her shamla.
"You said you understood. Your life is forfeit. That was clear from the very beginning."
Sherazade rose to her full height. She pulled back her shoulders and lifted her elfin chin. When she spoke, she matched the biting softness in his tone.
"All our lives are forfeit, Saidi. It is just a question of when. And I would like one more day."
He glared at her, the sharp cut of his profile, even more menacing with the haze of anger coloring its surface. A single knock struck the door of the chamber.
"Just one," she whispered.
The tiger eyes raked up and down her, gauging their adversary, weighing their options. A heart-stopping minute passed. "I will not beg." Another quiet knock at the door. Sherazade paced forward, her hazel orbs trained on the caliph. He took a slow step back before striding to the doors.
"No, please stop."
As he reached for the handle, he paused, without turning to look at her.
"One."
He pronounced the word like a soundless epithet before he stalked through the doors.
When they thudded shut behind him, Sherzad sank to the floor and pressed her flaming cheek against the cool marble. Even the release of tears involved too much effort. Despina and the Rajput. The tray slammed onto the table with a clatter and a bang. Sherzad bolted upright, sleep caking the corners of her eyelids. She swiped at them with her hand. Traces of liquid gold and black powder dotted her palm when she was finished. "You're very small to have caused such a big fuss," a musical voice intoned. "What?" Sherzad focused her bleary attention on its owner. "I said, you're very small to have caused such a big fuss." A plump girl near her age strode to the foot of the bed and yanked aside the gossamer curtains. She had fair skin and thick honey walnut hair piled atop her crown in typical Grecian fashion. Her eyes were the sparkling blue of the Aegean and were lined in kohl with the practiced hand of an expert. Her lips were puckered into a perfect moue, stained pink with carmine and beeswax. The white linen garment clung to her rounded frame in all the right places. A thick silver band was looped around her upper left arm. Sherzad pushed aside her drowsiness and attempted to conjure a semblance of dignity. "I heard you the first time. Then why did you ask me to repeat myself?" "Because I don't know who you are, and I have no idea why you're banging around making ridiculous pronouncements first thing in the morning," Sherzad shot back. The girl laughed. It was a loud and robust sound. "I think I'm beginning to understand why there's such a fuss. Also, it's hardly first thing in the morning. It's noon." The girl marched to the screens and threw them open to reveal a midday sun sitting high in a clear cerulean sky. Sherzad cringed away from the harsh stream of light. "I brought you some food. You should eat something. You're so small," the girl reiterated. "I fail to understand why my size is of import." "Because a waif of a girl can't manage a sustained fight, much less succeed in one, and I'd like to see you succeed." Instantly wary, Sherzad pulled her knees against her chest and shuddered her expression. "Succeed? By Zeus, you're a strange thing. Yes, my lady, I'd like to see you succeed, meaning I'd like to see you live. I'm not fond of watching young girls die at the whim of our enigmatic ruler. Are you?" Sherzad studied her for a breath before placing her bare feet on the cold marble and rising from the bed. "Be careful." "No, I'm not," she replied. The girl grinned. "You're taller than I thought. Still too skinny, but not the worst I've seen. There's a curve or two where there should be. I'm sure you're stunning when you're done up well." "I'm sorry, who are you?" Sherzad demanded. "Despina, your handmaiden, as long as you're succeeding." "I don't need a handmaiden." "I'm afraid that's not your choice." Despina's grin widened, and her blue fire eyes sparked at Sherzad, daring her to rise to the challenge of such impertinence. Sherzad paused in consideration. "So he sent you here to spy on me?" Despina's white teeth flashed in her face. "Yes." "Are you a good spy?" "The best." "A good spy would hide her identity." "The best spies don't have to." Sherzad smiled at this, in spite of herself. "You're arrogant." "As are you, my lady Sherzad. But I do not see this as a shortcoming. For without a measure of arrogance, how can one attempt the impossible?"
Sherazade stepped down from the platform to stand before Despina. The girl stood half a head taller, and everything about her radiated confidence and a sense of surety as to her place in the world. From her artfully draped dress to her impeccably enhanced features, it was clear Despina was a force to be reckoned with. But her eyes caught Sherazade's attention more than anything else. They were the watchful eyes of a hunter, and they mirrored her own. She warned me she was a spy. Why did she warn me? Would you like to eat something, or do you plan to go on a hunger strike? If that's the case, do your worst, for I believe a hunger strike will kill a pretty little imp like you long before our caliph does. Sherazade laughed wryly. That's the best worst compliment anyone has ever paid me. You're welcome. Despina spun around in a whirl of white linen, the scent of jessamine saturating the air about her. Sherazade followed her to the table in the corner. The tray atop it was covered with lavash bread, a round of goat cheese enfolded in sweet preserves, a tureen of soup, and a halved pomegranate, its seeds glistening like garnets in the warm light spilling from the terrace. An ornate silver pot of cardamom tea sat over a low-burning flame. Despina removed the lid from the tureen and began to prepare the tea, placing a sparkling crystal of rock sugar in the bottom of a small etched glass cup. As she sat on the cushions, Sherazade reached for a piece of lavash. The handmaiden peered through her eyelashes at Sherazade while she poured the tea in a slender stream from high above the glass. I meant what I said. I do hope you succeed, my lady. Her tone was filled with quiet circumspection. Please call me Sherazade. Sherazade, Despina grinned at her. Sherazade could not prevent herself from returning the gesture. Be very careful. An hour later, with Despina's help, Sherazade had bathed and dressed in another elaborate ensemble of silk and damask. A slim circlet of silver, spangled with pearls and tiny blue sapphires, adorned her brow. Around her neck was another fetter, made to match. Thin diamond bangles clinked together on her left wrist with every movement. "Am I allowed to leave?" she asked, once Despina had put the final flourish on the coal lining her eyelids. Despina nodded. "You can roam most of the palace as long as you're with the Rajput." "The Rajput?" The corners of Despina's eyes crinkled with a mixture of dry humor and pity. "The caliph is apparently so enamored, he has gifted you a member of his personal bodyguard." Sherazade balled her hands into fists. "So I necessitate a spy and a ready executioner?" "More or less." "Hate is not the right word for such a man." "Who is the Rajput?" Sherazade spat. "At one point, he was known as the Scourge of Hindustan. He's the best swordsman in Rey, perhaps in all of Khorasan. A devotee of the Talwar. There's only one other swordsman in Rey who comes close, but even he has never bested the Rajput." "Well, this information might be beneficial in the future." "Who is the second best swordsman in Rey?" Despina's brow furrowed. "I expected better of you." "What?" "I thought you would make it a point to be informed." "Forgive me for neglecting to carry around a list of the 10 best swordsmen in Khorasan," Sherazade shot back. "I suppose this information wouldn't be readily available to a young girl with a librarian for a father. It isn't exactly posted on walls for public viewing." "My father is a curator of ancient texts and the smartest man I know. He was a vizier for the former caliph." Shahrazad cut her eyes. And after his wife's death, I heard he lost his mind and was subsequently demoted. Now he's a librarian. I can't lose my temper. She's clearly trying to bait me. But why?
Shahrazad replied instead, with a measured silence intended to re-establish control. She fiddled with the heavy silver at her throat, despising its weight.
So, do you still want to know who the second-best swordsman in Rey is?
Despina asked, changing tack.
Never mind, it doesn't matter.
Despina smiled knowingly.
The second-best swordsman in Rey is Khalid ibn al-Rashid, our illustrious king of kings.
Shahrazad's heart sank.
Gifted swordsmen tended to be stalwart strategists, quick to spot signs of subterfuge. And this presented yet another obstacle. If he ever suspected her of treachery, it would be even more difficult to plot his death and catch him unawares.
She swallowed carefully.
Again, it doesn't matter.
I guess it shouldn't matter to you, but I thought you might want to know nevertheless.
What kind of game is she playing?
You thought wrong.
Shahrazad walked to the doors of the chamber and tugged on the handles. As soon as she crossed the threshold, a hulking figure stepped into view. His skin was the color of burnished copper, and he towered over Shahrazad with his head bound in an intricately wrapped turban. His exposed arms were thick with corded muscle, and his black beard was neatly trimmed to a point just below his chin. Eyes the color of a moonless night gleamed down at her, stark and merciless.
Yes. You must be...
I'm sorry, what is your name?
Shahrazad stammered.
I told you, he's the Rajput,
Despina replied from behind her.
But he must have a name,
Shahrazad rasped over her shoulder.
If he does, I don't know it.
With an irritated sigh, Shahrazad faced forward and braved the sight of her potential executioner once more.
I'm Shahrazad.
She met his black gaze.
He glowered at her before moving aside to let her pass.
As she slipped by him, she noticed the long talwar sword hanging from his hip, shining with menace in the midday sun.
So this silent brute is the only swordsman who can best my enemy. How am I to find any weakness in Khalid ibn al-Rashid with his spies all around me, watching my every move?
She exhaled protractedly.
I might have a serious problem.
Draw weight. The original structure of the palace had been built nearly 300 years ago by a king with a flair for extravagance. In the years since, many wings had been added to augment the base of marble and limestone. They branched off like tributaries, winding toward an unseen destination far in the distance. It would be easy to get lost in such a place.
How do I get to the courtyards?
Shahrazad asked Despina, after they had wandered the shining halls for half an hour. Despina canted her head to the side in thought.
I suppose that would be fine. No one expressly forbade you from going outdoors.
Shahrazad resisted the urge to retort as Despina backtracked down a corridor to the right. The Rajput stalked alongside Shahrazad, his posture as rigid and implacable as his expression. After several minutes of traversing in silence, they came to an open-air gallery with a series of arched double doors leading outside. An attendant pushed through one set of doors to allow them passage, and Shahrazad walked into a terraced courtyard, arranged like colossal steps in a descending staircase. The first of these terraces was filled with flowering trees and an elaborate aviary enclosed on all sides by carefully wrought trellis work. The sturdy acacia wood was covered with a thin layer of white paint and anchored by bolts of polished bronze. Lush blue-green grass flourished between pavestones of coarse granite. Scheherazade strode past the aviary, glancing at the colorful trove of songbirds flittering within. Nightingales, goldfinches, larks, canaries. A loud squawk blasted from behind her. She twisted around to find a peacock strutting across the lawn, his plumage of malachite and gold fanning in the sun, catching errant beams of light. Scheherazade glided closer. The peacock stopped to glare at her before lowering his fan and scurrying away. She laughed to herself. So quick to strut, so quick to flee. "What are you talking about?" Despina asked. Scheherazade shook her head. "Are you talking about men?" Despina snorted. Choosing not to reply, Scheherazade paced the length of the top terrace and took the stone stairs leading down to the next tree-lined expanse. This garden was bursting with white citrus blossoms and green figs hanging heavy on their boughs, still awaiting their moment to ripen. She passed through this tier, pausing only to breathe in the scent. Despina regarded her thoughtfully. "What are you trying to do?" she asked, with a trace of suspicion. Scheherazade lifted her hand to shield her eyes as she focused on signs of movement in an expanse of sand and stone below them. "If you'll tell me what it is you're planning, I can take you there," Despina offered. "I'm not planning anything. I'm looking for something." "What are you looking for?" "A handmaiden who doesn't ask so many questions." Despina snickered. Scheherazade quickened her pace as she flew down the last series of stairs, making her way to the intended destination of sand and stone. The Rajput grunted his disapproval as they neared the entrance. "So he's not mute after all." Despina huffed audibly. "I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to be here." "You said I could go anywhere, as long as the Rajput is with me," Scheherazade reminded her. "I don't think anyone expected you to come to the training grounds." Scheherazade's keen eyes ran over the sea of male faces lost in the art of sword play, training with spears and perfecting their deadly aim with the axe-like tabarzin. "He's not here." "Are you looking for the Caliph?" Despina demanded.
"No.
But I assume the second best swordsman in Ray will practice at some point today, if he intends to maintain his title. And I need to learn his weakness so that I may destroy him with it."
"Liar," Despina smirked.
"Actually, I came here because I wanted to..."
Scheherazade glanced around until her eyes fell on something she recognized well.
"I wanted to learn how to use a bow and arrow."
"What?"
Despina exclaimed. Feigning ignorance, Scheherazade moved toward the rack of weapons. The Rajput raised his arm to block her path, a note of warning in his onyx gaze. Scheherazade steeled herself before returning his belligerent stare.
"Would you teach me how to shoot? I've always wanted to learn."
He shook his head. She affected a pout.
"Nothing will happen to me. Anyway, I won't be your concern after tomorrow. Please grant me this small request."
"Maybe he's not worried about you," Despina stated caustically. Scheherazade attempted to sidestep his mammoth forearm. When he thwarted her again, she pursed her lips.
"Must you be so difficult?" she said in a harsh undertone.
"He's not being difficult. That's how he normally is," a rich male voice remarked from behind them. Both Despina and Scheherazade swiveled to meet the amused scrutiny of a young man with a curly mop of mahogany hair and a warm, affable expression. The Rajput stiffened.
"Perhaps I can be of assistance," the newcomer offered with a grin. Shahrazad shot him a winsome smile.
I hope so. I know who you are, my lady. By now everyone in the palace knows who you are.
His brown eyes sparkled with mischief as he winked at Despina. She averted her gaze, her cheeks coloring.
He's quite the flirt.
Then you have a decided advantage over me, sir, Shahrazad said.
I'm Jalal.
He bowed his head, his fingertips brushing his brow.
He's captain of the guard, and the son of General Aref al-Khoury, the Sharban of Rey.
Despina clarified in a rote tone.
Don't let the title fool you, my lady. I'm no one of consequence, even if my father is the highest-ranking general in Khorasan.
Well, we share a portion of that lamentable status, for I am also no one of consequence, Shahrazad said.
I doubt that, my lady Shahrazad. I highly doubt that.
Jalal grinned, bringing further light to an already easygoing demeanor. The Rajput grunted again. His lingering ire brought Shahrazad back to the matter at hand.
Would you be willing to teach me how to use a bow and arrow, Captain al-Khoury? She asked.
That depends on a few things. The first being that you dispense with the formalities and just call me Jalal. The second being that Khalid never discover my part in this transgression.
Khalid? He calls him by his first name?
I can meet those terms. Gladly, if you'll return the gesture on both parts. Jalal leaned forward conspiratorially.
Then follow me, Jalal.
Shahrazad laughed. Despina looped her arms over her ample chest.
This is a bad idea, she cautioned, her blue eyes flitting to Jalal's puckish face.
For whom? For you or for me? Shahrazad retorted. Because it seems like a very good idea for me to spend the last day of my life doing the things I've always wanted to do.
Despina sighed with resignation and trudged behind Shahrazad and Jalal.
The Rajput stomped in their shadows, his distaste as plain as his irritation, despite the sharp look of rebuke from the captain of the guard. Jalal led Shahrazad to the rack of bows. Several quivers hung from a steel bar. Their goose-feathered fletchings dyed in bright colors for easy recognition. Shahrazad pulled out an arrow from one of the quivers. Its tip was blunted for target practice. Taking special pains to appear nonchalant, she bent the back end of the arrow ever so slightly to determine the weight of its spine. Not that flexible.
"You've shot a bow and arrow before?"
Jalal inquired, observing her with a surprising amount of keenness for someone so seemingly blithe.
"Not really," she attempted to sound dismissive.
"So can I ask what you're doing with the arrow, then?"
"I'm merely curious."
She shrugged and put the arrow back in its quiver. Then she reached for another arrow with different colored fletchings. She performed the same test. Much better. She removed the quiver of arrows from the bar.
"It appears you might not need my tutelage after all,"
Jalal commented in an airy tone.
"No, no." Her mind scrambled to conceal her misstep.
"My cousin once told me it's easier to fire arrows with less spine when you don't have a lot of upper body strength."
"I see," Jalal stated dubiously.
"And what did your cousin have to say about bows?"
"Nothing. The comment on arrows was merely in passing."
His expression turned even more doubtful.
"Of course, in passing."
He made a quick study of the different bows leaning within the weapons rack. When his hand paused on a tall, straight-backed bow, he glanced over his shoulder at Shahrazad. She smiled at him. Still watching her, he shifted his hand to a much smaller bow, with ends that curved away from the archer when strung. The recurve bow. Shahrazad held her smile, refusing to fall prey to his attempt to bait her with the weapon of her choice.
"Do you have a preference?" he asked.
"Whatever you think is best."
He nodded. I think this will work for our purposes. With a knowing grin, he took the recurve bow from the rack and strode in line with the targets positioned 50 paces away. As she followed him, Scheherazade grimaced at her thoughtlessness in disclosing an aptitude for archery. What's done is done, but in the future do better. She reached up and coiled her wavy black hair into a knot on the nape of her neck. Then she shrugged off her cumbersome mantle and handed it to Despina. A faint desert breeze cooled the bare skin at her arms and stomach. Her fitted silver top had a square neckline and tiny capped sleeves. A silk sash of cobalt blue hung low across her hips, its pearl-embroidered ends trailing against the ground. Silver slippers kicked up tufts of sand with each step she took. Scheherazade slung the quiver onto her shoulder, and Jalal handed her the recurve bow. A crowd of curious onlookers had begun to gather off to the side. Despina and the Rajput stood out front, still sporting their respective looks of unease and disgust. Scheherazade placed her feet close together as she tugged an arrow from the quiver and struggled to position it on the sinewed string. Jalal was markedly unconvinced. When Scheherazade knocked the arrow back, the thin strip of wood struck against the handle of the bow as it trembled in her purportedly ignorant grasp. "Is this right?" she asked Jalal.
"No, it's not," he snorted. "But you know that, don't you?"
"Of course not."
"Are you sure?"
"Are you going to teach me or not?" she demanded.
He laughed.
"Put your left foot forward so that your stance is shoulder-width apart." She did as she was told. "Now relax your grip and lower your elbows. Use the sights positioned on the bow grip to aim." Scheherazade almost sneered. She hadn't needed sights since she was 13. Tariq had seen to that. "Once you've settled your sights, pull the arrow back as far as you can and release it." When she loosed the arrow, it spun in the general direction of the target before it floated to the ground, 20 paces shy of its destination. Scheherazade looked over at Jalal. He remained dubious. "Did your cousin explain draw weight to you?" She shook her head. He exhaled before stepping closer to her. "I chose this bow because it has a lower draw weight. I suspect this is the reason you chose that particular quiver of arrows. Meaning this bow and this arrow will work in tandem to help you draw back without having to use a great deal of upper body strength, which is especially beneficial for smaller archers like you."
"So draw weight is about size?"
"I think it's more about speed and accuracy. If you don't have to expend a lot of energy firing a single arrow, it makes it easier to knock another one into position quickly. You also tend to be more accurate when you're not straining yourself." "It makes sense," Scheherazade agreed. "I'm sure it does," he grinned. She ignored his meaningful tone as she reached back for another arrow. After she fitted it into position on the sinewed bowstring, her eyes darted to his face. "You must know the Caliph well," she began. His amusement faded slightly. "I've known Khalid since he was a little boy."
"Are you good friends?"
"No."
"I see."
She drew back the arrow farther and released it. This time, it sailed much closer to its target, but still managed to land buried in the sand. "I'm older than he is, by 2 years. His brother Hassan and I grew up together. We were very close. When Hassan died, I tried to extend a hand to Khalid, but..." He shrugged. "He never took it." Scheherazade turned to face him.
"I'm sorry."
"Why are you sorry?" "It isn't easy to lose your best friend. At least, I can't imagine it would be." "Thank you for saying so, but Khalid lost his older brother. His father died the following year, and because of that terrible incident with his mother,
He was only 14 when he took the throne. 14 and alone. I'm sure you have an idea of what came after.
I don't care. There is no excuse for the monster he's become. He's had 4 years to grow accustomed to being king. And as for what came after...
When Jalal saw the look on Shahrazad's face, he took a step in her direction.
Please understand, I'm not making excuses. His voice was very soft.
Shahrazad twisted away from him and snatched another arrow from the quiver at her back. She stopped herself when she realized she had fitted the arrow and knocked it in a seamless motion, ill-befitting a novice.
Jalal laughed. I'm sorry, but I am now convinced I've earned the right to ask for a favor, Shahrazad.
And why do you think that? She said under her breath.
Because my silence has a price.
She blinked. Excuse me?
He edged closer. I don't know what you're trying to do to Khalid, but you are the first person to rattle him in years, and he needs to be rattled.
Shahrazad met his steady gaze, the arrow still pressed tight against her neck.
Is there a favor in there somewhere?
Khalid is not my friend. He is not my enemy either. He is my king. I remember the boy he was, quite fondly. Kind, with a bright and inquisitive mind, a wandering soul. The broken creature he is now. I'm tired of it. Will you help me fix it, Shahrazad?
Shahrazad stared back in morose silence, wondering where such blind faith came from, such misplaced faith in a boy with a murderous past and a girl with treacherous intent.
Jalal studied her, his sun-bronzed face a hair's breadth from her own. At that moment, Despina burst from the shadows. Her features alight with horror. When Shahrazad traced the terror to its source, she felt the air leave her chest in a single sharp gasp. Across the courtyard, the Caliph of Khorasan stood watching them, his expression cool and composed, like the calm before a storm.
By the light of a single candle, at the sound of Shahrazad's wordless exclamation, Jalal glanced over his shoulder. Humor washed across his features, mixed with a hint of defiance. I guess neither of us will be able to meet our earlier terms. I guess not. Her hazel eyes were locked on her amber-eyed nemesis. But I hope we can continue this discussion at a later time. Jalal stepped away from her with a mocking bow. The Caliph crossed the expanse. He was wearing a kameez of the finest white linen and gray sirwal trousers. A tapered sword in a style Shahrazad did not recognize hung from the black tikka sash, looped about his hips. As always, he embodied the antithesis of everything she found warm and good in the world. All motion within the courtyard had ceased at his arrival. To his right was an older gentleman whose carriage and countenance were distinctly reminiscent of Jalal's. At his left was a nervous-looking man, clutching an armful of scrolls. Flanking him was a retinue of soldiers and bodyguards. For a perilous beat, Shahrazad considered turning her arrow on him. At this distance, she knew she could hit him, but the arrow's tip was blunted, meant only for target practice. It might not kill him. She lowered the weapon. It's not worth the risk. As he drew near, she willed her heart to cease its irrational pounding. If she intended to conquer this monster, she had to first quell all fears of him. Quickly. He stopped several paces before her and turned to Jalal.
Captain Al-Khori. His voice was deathly quiet.
Saidi?
Jalal dipped his head, touching his fingertips to his brow.
I was just showing the queen how to use a bow and arrow.
I can see that. The question is why?
Because I asked him, Shahrazad interrupted, much too loudly. His eyes shifted to her with dispassion. Shahrazad watched him take in her appearance. The lack of a mantle, the haphazard knot of hair, and the quiver of arrows dangling from her shoulder. "Then I redirect the question to you," he said. She set her jaw, drawing on a sudden reserve of impudence. "Do I need a reason?" "I asked for an explanation, not a reason." "They're the same thing." "Not necessarily." "Actually, they are, regardless of your perspective on the matter. I simply wanted to learn, and Jalal agreed to teach me." As she spoke, wisps of hair began to uncoil from the knot at her nape. "Jalal?" His eyebrows rose at this informality, the only sign of a reaction to her bold display. "Yes, Jalal." A lock fell forward into her face, and she shoved it behind her ear. "And what have you learned from Jalal?" "What?" she exclaimed, unable to conceal her surprise at his interest. "If he's been teaching you how to shoot a bow and arrow, you must have something to show for it, unless he's an abysmal tutor." Jalal started to laugh. "If you recall, Saidi, I believe I had a hand in teaching you when you were a boy." "Jalal John," Disharban rasped at his son, the lines of consternation further weathering his face. "Though archery has never been my strong suit," the caliph continued. "Your words, Saidi, not mine," Jalal grinned. "Jalal, that's enough," Disharban said sharply. "He is your king." Jalal bowed, his obedience still tinged by ridicule. "Well?" The caliph looked again to Shahrazad. She returned his expectant gaze. Then, without a word, Shahrazad refitted the arrow to the sinew, keeping the bow at her side for a moment. She desperately wanted to show him how well she could shoot, to demonstrate to the entire contingent of onlookers that she was no one to trifle with. She also wanted to do justice to the many years of patient instruction she'd received at Tariq's side. When she'd first asked him, as a young girl of 11, to teach her how to use a bow and arrow, she'd fully expected the 12-year-old son of a powerful emir to ignore a silly child's request. Yet, it was that summer in the desert, clutching a makeshift bow and arrow, that she first fell in love with Tariq Imran al-Ziyad. With his refreshing candor and his ready humor, with the charm of his beautifully devious smile. Granted, it had been nothing more than a starry-eyed infatuation at the time. But it was from those precious memories that she drew her strength whenever she felt darkness descend upon her. For the wonder of a first love can never be matched. She closed her eyes. "Tariq. No, today is not the day to make a point." She drew in a breath. "But it is also not a day to appear weak." With her eyes still shut, she raised the bow and drew back the arrow. She did not need to aim. She knew precisely where she wanted the arrow to fly. From the age of 13, she had aimed purely on instinct, relying on her ability to gauge her surroundings at a glance. She exhaled slowly. As soon as she opened her eyes, she loosed the arrow. It flew toward the target in a perfect spiral and struck exactly where she intended. "Amazing. Despite never taking care to aim, you actually hit the target that time," Jalal intoned dryly. "In a fashion." "It's because you're such a good teacher," she replied in a blithe manner. The shadows from a passing cloud seemed to cast a small smile across the caliph's lips. "Is it?" Jalal murmured. "In a fashion," she grinned. "Nevertheless, I did hit the target. Rather, I hit one of its legs." "Which would have been a remarkable shot had it been intentional."
But we've already established that I didn't aim. Regardless, I think I did fairly well, don't you?
What do you think, Saidi? Jalal asked. Does the queen pass your test of merit?
It was a brazen question on his part. Sherazad felt a hint of color rise in her neck as she faced the caliph. He was merely watching them interact in detached silence.
She missed the target, he stated simply. Sherazad's eyes narrowed. When the wayward lock of hair fell forward yet again, she stabbed it behind her ear with undue vehemence.
Perhaps my king would care to demonstrate the proper technique, she asked in a cool tone. Reaching back, she extracted an arrow and offered it, alongside the bow, to the caliph. That same incomprehensible flash of emotion flitted across his sharp profile, and Sherazad found herself growing ever more curious as to the thoughts behind it.
It doesn't matter what he's thinking. It will never matter. It should never matter.
He strode forward and extricated the weapons from her hands. When his fingers grazed hers, he hesitated before pulling away. Then his tiger eyes clouded over, and he drew back, his expression unreadable. Without a word, he knocked the arrow into position on the string. Sherazad watched him assume his stance. His lean form struck unnervingly precise lines as he pulled the arrow far back, bending the recurve bow until the arches at each end became all but unnoticeable. He exhaled while he took aim. Sherazad resisted the urge to smile.
He uses the sights.
The arrow flew in a tight spiral toward the target, striking near the center, but not within the bull's eye. He lowered the bow.
Not bad, Saidi, Jalal said with a smile.
It's acceptable, he replied under his breath. Nothing to boast about. The caliph extended his left arm to return the bow to Sherazad. He refused to meet her eyes, and then he turned to leave.
Saidi, she attempted.
He halted, but did not face her.
Perhaps you wouldn't mind?
Jalal can teach you. He is far more proficient than I. Irritation flared in Sherazad at the assumption she desired anything from him, beyond his death.
Fine, she bit out.
He took a few steps before he stopped again.
Sherazad.
Yes?
I'll see you tonight.
She snatched an arrow from the quiver and fitted it to the string.
I despise him. As if he could truly teach me anything about a bow and arrow. A boy who still uses sights? Tariq could tear him apart. Second best swordsman in Rey, ha!
She tried to ignore the flutter of uncertainty in her stomach. Jahandar studied the wall of the tent as it flapped in the cool night air. He lay on his side listening, waiting. Once he was certain Irsa's soft breaths had deepened into a restful sleep, he turned with great care and lifted his blankets. She stirred on the other side of the tent, and he froze. When she rotated in place so that her back faced him, he exhaled and rose to his feet. With a careful stretch, he warded away the weariness of a full day's travel. One foot in front of the other, Jahandar padded his way to his satchel. As soundlessly as possible, he raised the fold and eased the worn leather volume from between the sleeves. His heart pounded when he felt the warmth of the tome settle against his chest, the raw power of the pages now within his grasp. He shuffled to a corner of the tent and placed the ancient manuscript atop a trunk of clothes. Then he lit a single candle and took a deep breath. The cover of the tome was tattered and illegible. The edges were degraded, and a rusted lock bound its center. He stared at the blackened, aged book before him. If he started down this path, he closed his eyes and swallowed.
He thought of his wife in her final days, as she lay gasping for breath, begging for a moment more with her children, pleading for Jahandar to save her from the wasting disease. He thought of the instant he failed her, of the helplessness he felt holding her lifeless form in his arms, and of the crippling powerlessness as he watched his elder daughter march toward a monster only 2 sunsets ago. Whatever the cost, he would fix it. If Shahrazad had managed to survive the dawn, he would work to be worthy of such a daughter. And if she had not... He clenched the spine of the book tight between his fingers. No, he would not let himself cower in the darkness of doubt again. Jahandar reached into his nightshirt and pulled out the long silver chain hanging from his throat. Dangling on its end was a black key. He bent over the ancient tome and inserted the key into the lock. When the volume sprang open, a faint silver light emanated from the pages. Jahandar reached for the first page and stifled a cry. It burned his hand. No matter. He dragged his sleeve onto his fingertips and tried again. The text was an early form of Chagatai. Translating it would be a painstaking process, even for a man as learned as Jahandar, and especially with such pressing time constraints. Again, no matter. His heart thundered as he drew the single candle closer to begin his work. For his children, he would move mountains. He would not fail again. Aladdin and the Wonderful Lamp. This time, Shahrazad knew better than to wait for him. So it was no surprise when he failed to make an appearance until well into the night. The servants who delivered the food and wine found no trace of Shahrazad anywhere within the chamber. It was the caliph who discovered her, standing on the terrace, overlooking a side entryway flanked by fountains. She did not turn around when he arrived. Instead, she leaned over the railing and smiled to herself. He paused for a moment, and then joined her. A crescent moon hung high in the sky, reflecting back into the shimmering pools of water below. "You can't see them, but I love how you can smell the citrus blossoms from here. The suggestion of something beautiful and alive," she began. He didn't respond immediately. "You're partial to citrus blossoms?" "Yes, but I prefer roses above all. My father has a beautiful rose garden." He turned to her, studying her profile in the moonlight. "I think a father who tends to flowers must have objected to this." Shahrazad continued to stare ahead. "I think a king who hopes to be beloved by his people shouldn't execute their daughters at dawn." "Who said I hoped to be beloved by my people?" the caliph replied in a staid monotone. At this, Shahrazad twisted to meet his gaze. "And all this time, I could have sworn you were a smart man." She mimicked his quietly aloof tone as she pronounced this judgment, and the effect of her subtle mockery was not lost on him. A corner of his lips twitched. "And all this time, I could have sworn you didn't want to die." Shahrazad blinked, and then decided to laugh. The sound carried over the terrace, bubbling out into the night, filling the sky with the tinkling music of bells. The caliph watched her, his spark of surprise quickly masked by somber reflectiveness. "You're very strange," Shahrazad commented once her laughter had subsided. "So are you, Shahrazad al-Haizuran." "At least I know it." "I'm aware of it as well. But I don't punish people for it." He sighed. "I envy people who see the world as you do." "Are you insinuating I'm simple-minded?"
Anger seeped into her words. No, you see things the way you live your life, without fear.
That's not true. I'm afraid of a lot of things.